got here just in the nick of time. What does that make us?
Big damn heroes, sir.
Ain't we just?
You must be the famous Pepper Potts.
Indeed I am.
After all these years, Tony still has you picking up the dry cleaning.
I do anything and everything that Mr. Sark requires, including occasionally taking out the trash.
Rule number one, no touching of the hair or face.
Of course.
And that's it! Now let's do this!
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM, a film and TV radio show where a handful of film enthusiasts shoot the breeze about various films and TV shows. I am Marcus E. Acko, and my favorite Pixar movie is The Incredibles.
I'm Laura Sampson, and my favorite Pixar movie is Up.
And with us today, please tell us your name and what your favorite Pixar movie is.
Hi, Mark. My name is Gemma Dorsett. My favorite Pixar movie is Toy Story. In fact, Toy Story 1, 2, or 3.
I was going to say, because
yeah,
you said
no,
Toy
I
Story.
Can't choose, to be... I can't choose. I
All
can't
right.
choose.
Okay, no. Gun to your head. You have to pick Toy Story 1, 2, or 3.
Well, it's going to have to be the first one, actually, because it was so special. I think it was so new and bright and... You know, I hadn't really seen anything like it before.
So what do you say to the argument that that people have that the part two was better than part one? There's a whole, you know, there's the argument about sequels being worse than their predecessors or than the prequels, with the exception of usually people tend to throw up Toy Story, Godfather, Empire Strikes Back as examples where sequels actually surpassed the first ones. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. But Each one I enjoy just as much as the other, I think. And they really built on the characters and everything. And you really kind of love them by the time you get to the third one. You're just like, you know. And I think is there a fourth one?
Isn't there a fourth and a fifth one in sort of development?
Well, here's the thing. It all depends on how you look at it. Because Toy Story then moved on and they did like the straight to DVD movies. There's one where it's like a Halloween version and another one which is like...
I don't go in for that kind of thing.
Go. So if you're talking about proper cinematic release, yeah. I believe the fourth one is what's coming out. I don't know if they have a plan for a fifth one, but it's the fourth one that's coming out. And I hear rumors it's something along the lines of they go to look for the Bo Peep. Because, Bo Peep is Woody's love interest in the first one.
Yep.
And she just is never seen again, I think she's probably in the second. Yeah, she's in the second one, isn't she?
Doesn't she have a thing with Buzz Lightyear? I think there's a...
Really?
There.
Well, no. It's just
a bit of flirting going on.
Here's one thing I have an issue with that part one. Bo Peep actually in part one is made to look like a little hussy.
Because she's
set up as Woody's other, you know, other half. As soon as they start talking about like moving buddies, and she says her line, as soon as Buzz Lightyear does his flying thing, she turns around and says, "I found my moving buddy." And it's like, what? Just because this dude rolls into town with a pair of wings, you ditch good old Woody.
But I think you've got to expose kids to all different types of personalities.
Oh, really?
And Bo Peep has to work quite hard, there being fewer female characters in that show.
So all she had to do was... So the next bit is Woody complains about why is she going off with Buzz, and she comes out with the next line. It's like, oh, what have you done for me lately? And then moves on to Buzz. Like, no.
Right, there's a flip side to that.
What kind of story?
As far as I'm concerned, as long as there's the scene where all the little toys see the claw...
The aliens.
That's enough for me.
Yeah.
They're an entity within themselves.
That's
what I love about
them. Don't they have their own show? They should.
They do. I think they do. It's something probably on either Disney or Nickelodeon or something. No, it's probably Disney. They have their own show.
And in Disney, they have their own ride.
Do they?
I'm pretty sure. Isn't it all about... Don't they have their whole thing...
So is the claw, so what?
Yeah, what are they called? The aliens. Is it the aliens?
I think just called aliens, yeah.
Not like Toy Story Minions or anything.
No. That would be copyright infringement. No. I admit Toy Story trilogy is great. However, for me, Incredibles is just where Pixar excels because it sort of it combines a spy movie with the superhero genre and that sort of like 1950s spy movie. That's why for me, and the soundtrack alone is just like that's why one of the, I don't know if anyone's noticed, but when we do the UK top five, the theme for the UK top five is the Incredibles theme, because I hear that and I just get goose pimples. It's like, it's so good.
And it's cool that it's a family as well. I love that.
Absolutely, yeah. So you've got the family dynamic. It's a family story. It's a story. It's got so many themes just writing in that. It's for me. It's a film that I'm happy to show my kids, and I'm happy to watch. And it's got Samuel L. Jackson in it, man. Come on, he can do no wrong with Samuel L. Jackson.
I found it so difficult to choose between the Pixar movies because I don't think there's one I haven't enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can think of the number I haven't enjoyed.
I love The Incredibles, Wall-E,
Cars,
which was just beautiful. There was no speech in it.
Yes,
it
was for the first 25 minutes, at least, yeah.
And then really the speech didn't matter. And I think Up as well, the dialogue is usually something that's quite important to me.
True.
But Pixar has made me rethink that.
Don't get me wrong.
And it was those two movies that really did that. And
that's the reason why we went with Pixar, as in for that question, because it's difficult. How do you pick one? I can literally go through all of them.
Finding Nemo,
yeah.
Oh,
have you seen Finding Dory?
Yeah.
See, I like Finding Dory.
But
I liked Finding Dory. Obviously, Finding Nemo was better, but I was worried that Finding Dory would be terrible as a sequel, but it was okay. It held its own. Cars, on the other hand, honestly, I know you said it's hard to find something that Pixar have done wrong. For me, Cars is it. I do not like Cars. I do not like Cars 2. I haven't seen Cars 3. I'm not going to see Cars 3. They then went in and did a sort of a spin-off and did Planes and did Planes 2, and I don't like Planes and Planes 2. It's like, Pixar, what are you doing?
Every boy I know under the age of 10 or 11 that I've spoken to loves it, though.
What, loves Cars and Planes?
They love the film Cars.
Okay.
And the characters in the film Cars, and they've got the toys of the film Cars, and there's a real
the bed
thing.
Yeah.
If there's anyone listening who's under 12, you should be in bed. But if you aren't, then please let us know why you like Cars.
Yes.
If you like Cars,
you can send us a message on Twitter. Would 12-year-olds have Twitter accounts right now? Twitter accounts of 5-year-olds?
Worryingly, yes. I would imagine they
really.
Some, yeah.
Yeah. No. Okay. Fair enough. I know some. Yeah. Okay. We won't go there.
They know ways to communicate with each other that we will never know.
You know. Here's what you should do. If you're a 12-year-old and you're staying way past your bedtime to listen to this, go and talk to your parents. Get them to send us a message on Twitter at @STB_ResonanceFM or on our Facebook page, which is Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM, which is a show that you're listening to. Coming up on the show, we have the UK box office top five. We have our film and TV discussion, which I'll talk about a little bit more later on. We also have our Netflix and Amazon or other avenue recommendations. But first, we're going to do film and TV news. So last week we were raving about the BFI Film Festival, London Film Festival, and Laura, you said you had yourself some tickets to go to the BFI Film Festival.
I did. I had actually quite a full dance card of things that I had booked to see and various things that I'd booked and then forgotten that I'd booked. But I've been having lots of fun at the BFI London Film Festival this week. So far, on the £30 Discover Pass, where you get three films for 30 quid, I've seen a really interesting, educational, if not beautiful, documentary about the aftermath of the India-Pakistan separation. It's the 70th anniversary of the separation this year, and so there's quite a lot of different stories being told about it. And this one was from the perspective of two women, one on the Pakistani side and one on the Indian side, and they were going around interviewing different people in little villages and towns.
Is that Azma-ish?
On the border. That's Azma-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And I found it really really educational. I wouldn't.
I'm sorry. You should see your face right now. It's like, okay,
he's going to take a picture of me.
No, no, I'm not going to take a picture of you. You're describing the movie the same way someone says, is that person good looking? And your response is, they're funny and they've got a good personality. That is the expression you had on your face right there.
Well, to put it into words, it's really difficult to put into words. There was nothing wrong with it, but it didn't blow my skirt up, as it were.
Okay, fair enough.
I didn't have that kind of Marilyn Monroe, oh, that's such an amazing film, sort of a moment. I feel now like I know more about the situation, which is great, and I'll be able to follow the news.
So it was informative,
it
was informative, but it didn't stick with you the way another film, like maybe one of the next ones you're going to talk about, would have stuck with you.
No, what stuck with me that evening was that I got a glimpse of Robert Pattinson on his way into something that he wasn't actually in, but people knew that he was going to turn up. So there was a massive queue at the BFI cinema.
Isn't he in Andy Serkis's debut movie?
Oh, Breathe.
Breathe, yeah. Which was airing at BFI.
That's what it was. Yeah. Oh, he was in it, but he wasn't starring.
I thought he was. Okay, but I
the one with Claire Foy?
Yes. Yes.
And Andrew Garfield.
That's it. You're right. Yeah. Andrew Garfield, yep. So I may be wrong. I assumed that he was in that. He may be supporting character.
Could be,
but
yeah. Yep.
That was one of the hottest tickets of the BFI Festival.
Or Robert Pattinson?
because he was going to marry Lamar.
Yeah, maybe. But it's also one that's coming out fairly soon.
Okay.
On a general theatrical release, along with some of the other things that I was keen to see but didn't see. The Blade of the Immortal, Takashi Miike's 100th film. That was premiering, but it's also out at the beginning of December, so that's fine. I'll catch it later. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Yep,
that's out just after Christmas.
That's a McDonough one, right?
That's Martin McDonough's the writer. Frances McDormand is in it as a vengeful mother.
Yeah.
And it's been getting all kinds of rave reviews.
What was the other one that you saw?
The other thing I saw was actually on the way here tonight, was called Going West, and it was a really beautifully shot, heartfelt story about the relationship between a father and a son after the mother has died.
Okay.
They go on a sort of a road trip together, and they meet some quite funny characters from one or the other's past, and there are some really lovely moments of dialogue, and I felt like it was a really amazing example of subtitles working really well.
Okay.
I don't understand Norwegian.
Fair enough.
But I've really felt involved in the film and in the kind of comedy that looked like was going on.
Yeah.
So whoever did the subtitling, you're brilliant. Thank you so much.
So was it the fact that the way the text appeared on the screen worked in conjunction with the movie? So it wasn't just a simple lettering across the screen. Did that interact somehow with the way the story was told?
I think so. But, you know, when those things happen, they happen in such a sort of subliminal way. I felt like the words turned up exactly when they were meant to, and they were the exact right words, having been on the receiving end of some fairly dodgy subtitles for kung fu movies and other movies that have been quite hastily.
I'm just curious about
treated.
That. Fair enough. I understand what you mean by that. I'm just wondering, as you said, you don't speak Norwegian, and they've gone through that extra effort to transform the subtitles to work with the storytelling technique. I wonder if they would use that same technique if it was airing. If it was airing for a Norwegian audience, would they still keep the subtitles there? I mean, you will need to, because obviously they understand Norwegian. Would you still keep the subtitles, or is that mainly for a non-Norwegian speaking audience?
It's for a non-Norwegian speaking audience.
That's quite interesting. I'd love to actually speak to someone who is Norwegian, who's watched that movie and basically without the subtitles, to see if they got the same sort of impact with the subtitles not being used in the same way, or them not having the subtitles, to get that extra dimension of listening to the story that way, as opposed to someone who, like yourself, who you had that extra. It's the same thing but basically listening to a movie, not watching it, just listen to the audio, as opposed to watching it and then getting both avenues. But, you know, that's by the by. I'll find any of my Norwegian friends and say, go and watch Going West and tell me what you think.
Right, our next guest on the show will be... Yeah. I'd love to speak to a subtitler, actually.
There was another movie that you said you had watched, which was...
Which was actually the highlight of my week. I saw Mudbound, another highlight of the festival. Sight and Sound magazine, Empire magazine, and other various other reviewers have really been very kind to this movie, I guess. But kindness really has nothing to do with it, because it's a great movie, directed by Dee Rees, set in the American Deep South just after the war. It's the story of a boy who's fought in the war, a black boy who's fought in the war, who comes back, and so much has happened to him, but so little has changed.
Okay.
And in that context, there's a sort of a family drama on a cotton plantation that used to be a cotton plantation which was worked by slaves.
Okay.
But now is worked by a family who are really trying to, a black family who are trying to make good, I guess, but also a white family who've fallen on slightly hard times.
Okay.
So
there's a sense of racial tension between the two, the white family and the black family in the movie.
There is. But that's only the start of it. Saying much more would sort of
spoil okay.
quite a lot of the suspense.
What's it called again?
It is called Mudbound.
Mudbound.
It is just beautiful. The cinematography by Rachel Morrison, I think, is just outstanding. I could have watched that with no dialogue and no sound and still got so much from it.
Did you mention earlier that Mary J. Blige, the R&B singer, was in that movie?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
She had a really great turn as the mother character in that. And I've never seen her as an actress before. So that's kind of a surprise for me.
I can't remember any movies that she's actually been in. Because she recently appeared on Jonathan Ross' show this weekend, which I drifted in, flicked channels, and I saw her on there, and I was just thinking, oh, I wonder what she's here. I just thought she had a new R&B album coming out. But it's most likely the fact that she's probably here to promote Mudbound, which is what she was in.
So is that going out to more... Is that just at the BFI currently?
It's premiering at the BFI. But it's actually getting its big release straight onto Netflix in December.
I heard that. Ooh, yes, yeah. Because it's an okay. So that means straight away you can go and watch it. I'm looking forward to watching that.
You can, but the big screen experience. I'm sorry,
I'll
miss out.
I'll get like a projector. I'll put Netflix on and I'll put a massive white sheet on my wall and I'll watch it that way. So, same thing, right? So
yeah, and I'll stand on the other side of the street and watch it through the window.
There you go. Oh, excellent. Yeah. See, it'd be like an outdoor cinema.
But we've talked about this before, haven't we? Netflix becoming a hugely powerful force in TV, cinema, world.
A lot of film studios are trying to block Netflix from actually getting into that game. They're saying, stick to your lane. Don't get into movies. Just stick. But the good thing, and we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, one thing I really like about Netflix is they take risks. They don't shy away from anything that a lot of people would say, no, that's ridiculous. I don't want to watch that. If they find merit in it, they'll happily put it on there. So I'm looking forward to Mudbound.
Mudbound's it's a film that's going to win quite a lot of awards, I think. Lots of different pundits have said so. It's opening the American Film Institute Festival. It won a prize at Sundance, at Toronto.
What did you think of Jay Blige's performance?
Sensitive and powerful.
Okay.
Really.
Your pause there.
I was really
your pause.
Impressed.
I thought you were going to go.
I was. That
she
pause
was in
was
it.
A,
she was nice.
She was there.
That pause was a searching for the right word pause, because there were several outstanding performances in the film.
Fair enough.
And outstanding in different ways.
Well, it's not out on Netflix yet. So when it comes out on Netflix, you can use that as your Netflix recommend.
Thanks.
You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. So the second news story I want to bring this up was debut of Time Wasters on ITV2 yesterday, last night at 10 o'clock, two episodes. I thought it was only going to be one episode, two episodes. For those of you who missed it, Time Wasters is a comedy, is a half-hour comedy about a jazz quartet from South London, four black musical artists, three gentlemen and one lady, who get transported back in time to 1920s London. It's a comedy written, created, and co-starring Daniel Lawrence Taylor. If those of you who watched shows like Uncle or Cockroaches, also on ITV2, would recognize him. Or if you follow stand-up, he has a stand-up duo, Ginger and Black. He's the black one in Ginger and Black. Very, very funny pair. And the show as well. I watched it. Laura, did you watch it?
I did. And it's the first time I've watched ITV on actual ordinary TV for a really long time.
So what did you think?
I was pleasantly surprised, and I thought it was worth watching adverts for.
Okay.
Usually I turn the adverts off, but I was so into it, I didn't.
Hey, see, that's why you can, if you have Sky or you have TiVo, you can just fast forward past the adverts. I liked it. I liked Time Wasters. It was for me, one thing that really got to me was watching ITV2 and seeing such. I mentioned this before, seeing the fact that the four main characters were all black. And they were one thing that surprised me, and I'm surprised I'm even saying this, is that there weren't many in racial comedies. They tend to make the white characters either dumb or sort of disadvantaged compared to the ethnic lead characters. While the pilot might have started that way with a little bit of confusion, with you know they're just meeting black people for the first time, the second episode in particular just basically stepped away from that. There's one scene in particular, my favorite of both episodes, where Nick, the main character played by Daniel Taylor, and Nigel Havers, they meet, I'm not spoiling anything. Nigel Havers is a psychiatrist, and Nick is obviously this guy who's from 2017, knows about psychiatry, etc. And they're having this conversation, and the banter between the two of them is really entertaining. I definitely would recommend it. And tune in for next week's show as well, because we'll have Daniel Lawrence Taylor, the creator and writer of the show, coming into the studio with us. That's the 17th of October at 9 p.m. So the man, the myth, the British version of Donald Glover is going to be in the studio with us.
I cannot wait. That was a highlight of my TV week so far.
Excellent. So if you have any questions for Daniel, please send it to us on send us to us on Twitter at STB_ResonanceFM or on our Facebook page, which is Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. And barring any sort of unforeseen acts of nature, such as Armageddon or, I don't know, a schedule change or something like that, he'll be in the studio to talk with us. This is Shoot the Breeze with Marcus E. Acko.
And Laura Sampson.
And with us today, we've got our guest, Gemma Dorsett. Gemma, you haven't said much today.
I haven't. Well, I wasn't sure, you know.
You didn't want to jump in?
Yeah. Well, you know, you're both doing so well.
No. One of the reasons why I actually wanted to talk to you about connected to Time Wasters, which is about a jazz quartet. Mm. You are a blues rock singer, a powerful blues rock singer, lead for the band 1111.
Yeah, yeah. It's a new project started earlier this year. So you'd think I'd know how to use a microphone.
Yeah, it's okay, because you're thinking you're on stage, you're projecting.
It's because I think I have bigger lungs than I do.
Okay.
I didn't need to do the accent.
No, I didn't say anything for those. We won't go there.
We don't need to.
We won't go there.
Am I going red? Are we having a Marilyn Monroe moment?
Well, not the skirt blowing up, but...
young man. No, sorry, that's Harry Enfield, wasn't it?
Anyway, yeah, so we've done a few gigs. It's a work in progress, and... yeah, just sort of finding our feet a little bit, I guess, with the whole thing. We're doing covers at the moment, but my goal is to create a set of mainly original songs. So I've been reaching out far and wide. Anybody who can sort of help collaborate with me and do some songwriting and stuff like that. I feel like I've got a lot of stuff I need to get out. So it would be good to hook up with some. You know, some songwriters and musicians.
So you've already started writing your own stuff.
Yeah. So I've been exceptionally fortunate to I found a wonderful vocal coach called Nikki Lamborn. Nearly 3 years ago now, and she's one half of a band called Never the Bride.
Okay.
And they're just fantastic, and their songwriting is just incredible, and in my view should be. Much more better known than it is. It should be being celebrated far more than it is.
But I can say the same thing about 1111, because I've seen you perform and you are a powerful singer on stage.
Thank you.
So I mean, I know you've done a number of shows, which I've missed. The last one I went to was about a year ago, but you've done a number around Bracknell and States.
That
this was. This was not a year ago, two years ago.
Was it the company one?
Yes, it was the company one. So I was there. I happened to be a guest.
Was that
and
the
I,
James Bond one?
Yes, it was. Was that the was James Bond James one? No, I can't remember if it was the James Bond one, but it was something, it was a themed party. But I remember I hadn't seen you in years and I show up at this company party and then all of a sudden you show up on stage. I'm like, hey, it's Gemma. And then boom, this voice just erupts from stage and I'm like,
Singing a James Bond?
I think it was Skyfall. So James Dean is a good friend of mine. He's a fantastic musician, and in fact he's going down the blues route himself. He's a great songwriter, and I'm hoping to get together with him sometime soon. He often does the company party. I've even hired him myself.
Yeah,
just so that he invites me to sing. It's very self-serving.
Of course, you have to, right? That's why we do this show. We get producers to come on board, and then after. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I don't pitch to producers afterwards.
Listen, I know how it works.
Yeah, I've got the script. This has been sitting in my desk. Do you want to go and work on that? No.
Exactly.
Just before we came on the show, mm-hmm. you played a song for me that you had written yourself, A Streetcar Named Desire.
Right, and that was with Never the Bride that I just mentioned just now. And as I said, they've been very generous with their time and giving me guest spots and whatnot. And alongside of that, giving me some time, showing me how the songwriting process works or how their process works. I mean, it's a unique thing, I think, to everybody. There's probably common threads through most things. You know, some people write lyrics first and some people write the melody first or have the melody in their head and try and get it down. I don't play an instrument, so it can be an often frustrating thing for me. You know, I even had it the other night, this tune just going round and round and round in my head, and I ended up singing it into my phone at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I was going to ask, how do you capture that?
Right, yeah. And then I woke up at 7 o'clock in the morning and I played it back, and my word, it was awful. I mean, it was just, I'm trying to decipher it now, so I need to sit down and
well,
try
you
and
were
remember
half
it
asleep.
I was half asleep. Yeah. No.
Wasn't going to suggest anything.
I hadn't had any drink. No. And
not that time.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So it's just finding that right moment, I suppose. And you know, and often things will pop into my head when I'm doing something that's quite meditative. So mm-hmm. For example, driving, which shouldn't be meditative, but you know what it's like when you're concentrating on something else and your mind isn't.
Absolutely.
You know,
that's kind of how I watch TV most of the time.
What, you're just thinking about something else while
well,
you're watching TV?
You know when you have TV on in what you think is the background, but it's sort of taking up
maybe
about a third of your brain while you're trying to cook dinner or
you're doing something consciously and there's something unconsciously going on in the back of your mind.
Check your emails.
Yeah, exactly.
That's basically what I do constantly. I just have Netflix or Amazon playing in the background while
dear.
I'm doing everything else. There was a question I was going to ask you because I was talking about Streetcar Named Desire. When I saw the performance, one thing that struck out to me was, again, as I mentioned, you have such a powerful voice and presence on stage. Have you ever considered doing a musical? The example I pitched earlier was something like Rocky Horror Picture Show. Have you considered doing something like that?
I was fascinated that was the first thing that came into your head, me on stage doing some sort of drag show, and I love you for that. I really do.
I didn't suggest you going in drag. I said Rocky Horror Picture Show.
It wouldn't be drag, actually. It'd just be me in fishnet tights.
For all you know, I could have been suggesting the Meatloaf character as opposed to Tim Curry.
True.
Exactly.
We could fall out. Actually, the first musical I was in was Fiddler on the Roof.
Okay.
Fiddler on the Roof, and when I was in sixth form, and I was
Rev
Tevye.
The film of that is brilliant.
Absolutely.
Well, you should have seen the musical that we did at school. I mean, it was, you know, I had a fake beard and everything. And I'm not talking like with the elastic band. I'm talking like individual hairs on me. It took me days to get that stuff off my face.
Okay.
And my headmistress said afterwards when I asked her, you know, what did you think? And she said, well, I don't think this is something that you should be pursuing.
Wow.
I know, it was hard hitting. I've avoided anything musical theatre.
No. On the contrary, what you need to do is we need to write you a musical. You need to perform it. You need to blow everyone away of it. And you go back to her and say, look at what did you say I should do? That's what it is.
Yeah,
that's how you do it.
Read it and weep.
Exactly.
I like this.
You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I am Marcus E. Acko.
And I am Laura Sampson.
And our guest is Gemma Dorsett, the powerful blues rock singer, lead singer of 1111. Now, something that we introduced last week was playing a favorite song from a soundtrack.
So what have we got this week?
It is Escape, the Pina Colada song. It is by Rupert Holmes, and it's from Guardians of the Galaxy.
I was tired of my lady. We'd been together too long. Like a worn out recording of a favorite song. So while she lay there sleeping, I read the paper in bed. And in the personal columns, there was this letter I read. If you like piña coladas, my lady, I know that sounds kind of mean, but me and my old lady have fallen into the same old routine. So I wrote to the paper, took out a personal ad, and though I'm nobody's poet, I thought it wasn't half bad. Yes, I like piña colada. It's you. Then we laughed for a moment, and I said, I never knew that you like piña coladas.
That was Rupert Holmes, Escape, the Piña Colada song. I love that song. I know the song came out, obviously, ages ago. I enjoyed the song. But I didn't really think about the song much until Guardians of the Galaxy came out. And Guardians of the Galaxy is one of my favorite films. It's my top 10. It's in my top 10. I won't say exactly
top
where.
Top 10 of all time.
Yes, because, again, top 10. I'm not saying the best films of all time, favorite films of all time, because it's got a whole bunch. We'll talk about that when we talk about superhero movies. And then that song came on because it fitted perfectly in with the movie, and that's why it's now one of my top soundtrack movies from a soundtrack. But we'll discuss that in another show. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I am Marcus E. Jacko.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
And with us, our guest is Gemma Dossett. Hi, Gemma.
Hi.
Yeah. So we've gone through the film, TV news. What we're going to be doing now is UK box office top five. Okay, so box office top five. Number five is Victoria and Abdul. Ooh. Now, that has stayed in the top five for like the last 3 weeks at least. I'm quite surprised. I mean, I know it's hanging in there. If it's still in top 10 next week, that'll shock me. But hey, it's good. I mean, you both have seen Victoria and Abdul, right?
Yes.
What are your thoughts?
I loved it. I mean, I'm a huge Judy fan.
Okay.
Huge Judy fan. And I thought she... It had a wonderful humor to it. I think they brought wonderful humor to Queen Victoria.
Yeah.
And I mean, the situation in itself, and it really showed her vulnerability. And I mean, obviously she was quite a...
And her intellect as well. She managed to learn Urdu. She did actually manage to learn it.
Well, as in, it was Victoria or Judy Dench?
Her interpretation of Victoria, like, no one knows how good she was. But her... learning from someone who she felt she could look up to as a teacher for whatever reason was a really strong part of the story, I thought. And the character of Abdul, while not the most fleshed out character in the world, I hope you'll probably agree.
That was
me,
your criticism last week, yeah.
It was nice to see that he wasn't just, you know, the put upon guy who was pushed out of court because he was the wrong colour. Yeah. He was more complicated than that, and he certainly had his flaws.
Okay. So it's a good movie all around. Okay. Number four, The Mountain Between Us. Now this one crept up for all of us. I didn't get to see this. I didn't know it was actually going to be in top five. Otherwise, I would have made an effort, especially the fact that it's Idris Elba. I am an Idris Elba fan. I haven't read many reviews about this particular one. I will go and watch it, so I'll have more to say about it next week. Fingers crossed it's still in the top five, right?
Yeah, I feel like it's just come up from underneath like some kind of a black lagoon or something. I have only seen posters for it since it came out.
So it's Idris Elba and Kate Winslet.
Idris Elba and Kate Winslet. That's not something I would have ignored.
It is bizarre. I've only just seen it literally in the last few days. Yeah. Not seen the film, but seen the, you know, I think it was something on, it must have been on TV, like some interview or something.
Okay.
It's just a very understated, bizarre.
Yeah, well, it must be because of the other huge things that have been coming out all around it as well.
Yeah, one which we'll talk about when we get to number one. Number three, It. It is now, Laura, you said you got a fascinating stat about It today, didn't you?
Well, not only has it been in the top 10 the top five all around the world for the last, six weeks, something like that.
Yep.
It's made something like $300 million
worldwide. Oh, that's okay. Well, it deserves it.
Have you seen it? Huge budget film. Either.
There is nothing in the world that would make me go and see that.
Oh
film.
No, you should.
No,
you should.
No.
Oh, you should.
I wouldn't watch the first one. Bringing us back nicely to
Tim Curry. Curry. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. He's looming this particular episode.
Oh,
no, you should.
Tim
you should
Curry.
See it.
Sorry.
Okay. I know you're probably remembering. The Tim Curry version, and you're scared of the Tim Curry version, and you think,
terrifying.
No, I don't want to go and see it. See this one, because as an adult, you will appreciate it differently from the Tim Curry version, because it has a sense of nostalgia to it. It is very well done in terms of the scares aren't jump scares; they are creepy, which is amazing, and the acting as well, especially from the child cast, the cast of children or the cast of youngsters. They are all excellent.
I heard they're very good.
I
never saw the original one again because I was utterly terrified. And
okay,
so I'm not joking. I'm
by the idea of it.
Yeah, and when you hear so much, I mean, just the image, the picture was so cathartic.
Everybody
like
floats down here.
Yeah, and you hear the things at school and stuff. But yeah, should I read the book? Because I love reading Stephen King.
Okay.
So maybe I should read the book and then
read the book.
Edge up to.
Yeah, read the book and then see if you can that makes you confident enough to go see the movie.
Watch it on a teeny tiny screen, not like the cinema, something like that, like a phone screen.
Well, okay.
I'll do that. I'll build up to it.
You can do that.
I have to say, it's not something I'd watch on a plane, for instance. I don't really like watching horror films on planes. I really get over emotional if I'm on a long haul flight. And so if I watch a horror movie, I'll actually be scared
where I wouldn't
in the cinema.
Okay. Well, fair enough. Number two, Kingsman, Golden Circle. Have you seen it?
I've seen the original, which I loved. I haven't got around to seeing the second
one. I've seen the second one. It's enjoyable. It's not as good as the original. The part one, which was Kingsman Secret Service. It's good. Had some emotional moments in it. I won't go into it. It was into spoiler territory. But no, it's a good movie. Definitely recommend going to see Kingsman. Especially if you've seen the first one, go and see the second one just to complete it.
Yeah.
It's popcorn blockbuster movie you should watch. So you love Colin?
I'm a big Colin fan.
I'm a big Mark Strong fan. So
yes,
yeah,
he's in everything.
He is, but that's because he's good.
Yeah,
he's really good.
Wonderfully British.
And number one, Blade Runner 2049. Now I read this thing where, it's number one here, but apparently it's not doing too great in the States. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I've heard pretty negative stuff about
it. It's about as long as two films.
It's a 3-hour movie, right? Or close to 3-hour movie,
and it's. I think that's such a commitment. Even myself thinking about going to see it, not being frightened by 3-hour movies.
Yeah.
I love the Lord of the Rings trilogy just as much as anyone.
Uh-huh.
And I have watched a 4-hour movie in the cinema without needing to go to the loo or whatever.
But that's the thing. I think
for a lot of people, it's just quite difficult to fit into a schedule.
Yeah, and I think that's the point. Going to the cinema and seeing it, spending 3 hours at a cinema to watch a movie is something that these days everyone's too busy to go and do that. So I think it might slump at the box office, but when it comes out on DVD, it's going to do amazingly well, because you can get it on DVD, you can get it on you know, rental, etc., and you can sit at home and just watch because you don't have to go anywhere. So
you,
I think it'll probably
go
do that.
Some dinner, come back.
Exactly.
It's doing fairly well over here, though. Much sort of proportionally better than in the States.
Do you think there's anything maybe culturally that affects that? Maybe in Europe or maybe in the UK alone, we are more we're willing to give art a chance to actually sit down and watch something like that and spend 3 hours, as opposed to Americans who want, like, I'm generalizing, but basically by saying Americans just want fast food. They want to go and watch the next Transformers, the next Michael Bay, schlock. They would just basically be. I'm not.
I'd love to be able to say that, but sadly, I don't think I
any
can.
Americans listening, and I know there's one American in particular who's listening. Text us or tweet us on at STB_ResonanceFM. Let us know what you think. If you think I've just insulted the entire American, all our American listeners, that's fine. Tweet us and let us know.
Tweet Trump, see what he thinks.
Yeah. I don't think he cares. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Marcus E. Acko.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
And our guest tonight is the gorgeous, the ever so talented Gemma Dorsett. We are now going to move on to our top five film and TV discussion, which we will talk about it in a second. And it's to do with musicians, but let's have our theme tune first. Picture the scenario. You've been commissioned to make what should be the greatest movie ever created about an unknown musical act called Escalante's Experience. You think to yourself, to be great, you need to study greatness. And with that in mind, you gather your top five favorite films about musicians, real or fictional. What are they? So that's the topic of our film and TV discussion today. Top five favorite films about musicians, real or fictional. Gemma is our guest. What is your number five and number four?
Number five. Wait, are we doing best?
No. Your favorite.
My favorite. I found this really, really hard, actually.
Don't worry, we won't judge you.
Okay, good.
We will, but I'm just saying.
Quietly later. Well, so Dreamgirls.
Why were you hesitant by saying Dreamgirls?
Because I feel like I'm being disloyal to the other four.
I think of that as a musical rather than a film, so a stage musical.
But that's fine.
It is, it's about... Okay, so I... Because it's loosely based on the Supremes, I guess. Yeah. And it's...
It's a good choice, and it fits in with our discussion because it's a film about a fictional group of musicians, the Dreamgirls. So it does work, and it's an amazing film. Beyoncé, I mean, she's not much of an actress, but in that movie, she fits the role.
Singer, so
she fits the role. It's slightly insulting to say that she basically is that character. I mean, there's a line in it where Jamie Foxx says, the reason why I picked you is because your voice has no personality, and it's kind of harsh.
Yeah.
But then you have Jennifer Hudson, who's just full of
it out the park.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And she, first movie ever, gets an Oscar for it, well deserved as well. It's a great pick. What's your number four?
So then that kind of leads to Cadillac Records for me because those two were I kind of watched them around the same time.
That's Adrian Brody, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
okay.
But for me because it was about Etta James.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not about. I mean, it's loosely based on these guys, and again, Beyoncé just knocks it out of the park as Etta James, and she's, you know, how she delivers. I can't even think of the name. I'd rather go blind.
Okay,
you know, just incredible performance. So, those two songs, particularly again from Dreamgirls, and I'm telling you,
yeah.
You know, just left such a mark on me.
Those are two good choices. I won't knock them. Cadillac Records, maybe not so much, but still.
In terms of the film, it's not one of the best that is out there. But yeah. Again, because it was about Etta James, mostly based on Etta James.
I didn't say it was going to be the best of all
later.
Time. I said your favorite, and I did promise I wasn't going to judge you. Although I did caveat that by saying I'll judge you to myself. Laura, what's your number 5 and 4?
First of all, Etta James is one of the most inspiring women ever. Anything about her, I would just like. But Adrian Brody is also rather amazing. And he appears in my number 5, which is The Pianist.
That's Roman Polanski
and directed Adrian Brody as the composer and pianist Vladislav Spielman, who managed to get through the Holocaust alive because of his musical abilities.
Okay.
And it's heartbreaking and beautiful soundtrack and wonderful performances.
He won an Oscar for that as well?
And yes, he did. And I've seen it a couple of times and loved it both times.
It's a very good pick. It's a very good pick. What's your number 4?
My number 4 is Amy, the Amy Winehouse
documentary. Yep.
It did amazingly over here, actually, probably better than it did anywhere else, and then sold really well on DVD as well. And I found it quite sensationalist. It was directed by Asif Kapadia. Have you seen any of his other work?
Did he do the one about the race car driver?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, he did. But there was just a really, really kind of fast-moving... fairly sensationalist, but you got the payoffs of Amy sort of messing up some of her lines in a show or playing the guitar beautifully in the waiting room of a record company and sort of sitting on Primrose Hill stoned off her face. There are lots of little vignettes of her doing a thing and then going on to something that was just a really well-made film that made me cry and made me like Amy Winehouse more.
See, I've got that in my list to watch. I just haven't had the opportunity to watch it yet. It sort of drops and so on. But I'll get around to that. Good, very good choices. My number 5 is Whiplash, 2014. Yep, Miles Teller, J.K. Simmons. We're just picking Oscar winners here, but it's great. The one thing I really love about Whiplash is it shows how far someone is willing to go to be the best, because that's what he is. I mean, he sacrifices all his personal relationships with Melissa Benoist, with his dad, Paul Reiser. He puts that to the back burner because he wants to be the best drummer there is. And that struck a chord with me because it's like, how far would you go to be at the top of your game?
It had much more in common for me, though, with sports films over a sports or a gymnastics sort of a training film.
The themes are exactly the same. You can basically say, right, you could apply that to any art, any science, any job. How far will you go to be the best at what you do? And it's a powerful movie. I recommend everyone go and watch it.
It was powerful, but I really thought that there was something about the sort of sports, that physical treatment of it, that was trying to say something even more about how people become obsessed with musical pursuits in a really visceral way.
Yes.
And so it was kind of saying more about music by seeming like a different sort of a film.
Absolutely. And that's the reason why it's on
Brilliant
my list. My number four is Amadeus. It's for me, Amadeus, while it's about Mozart, while it's a movie about Mozart, for me, it's actually a movie more about Salieri, who's played by F. Murray Abraham. It's basically it's seen from the perspective of someone who was Mozart's supposed mentor, and you see his character change from trying to cultivate Mozart into being a respectable musician, but Mozart just basically blowing him out of the water because of his natural talent. And then you see the jealousy come up from Salieri, and then it's suggested that he poisoned him and he killed Mozart at the end. And that's the reason why I love that movie, because you just see this character just devolve from being high and mighty right through to being in the dirt, all because of music. And that's why Amadeus is my number four.
That's such a great it's such a great story. I know it as a stage play first before a movie.
Yeah.
But it's the same story.
Absolutely. So, you're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. We are talking our top five favorite movies about musicians, real or fictional. Gemma, what is your number three and number two?
Okay, so my number three is Janis, Little Girl Blue.
Oh,
I watched recently, which I'm ashamed to say it took me so long to watch it, but I remember having a poster of Janis in my university.
This is Janis Joplin, right?
Janis Joplin, sorry, okay. Yeah, of course. And so I used to go to bed looking at Janis every night. Big poster on my bedroom wall. But she the power in her voice is so incredible, and I think that's something that especially doing the kind of songs that I like to sing. You know, it's just when you really feel that, and she.
Yeah.
You know, of course, I think a lot of the stuff that I do does go right back to the real raw blues stuff. I think it's right in there, and it really, really want it to come out. And that's why Janis Joplin is such a huge icon. You know, I mean, Bessie Smith, in fact, was one of her influences, heavy influences.
Okay, so the movie's called Janis, right?
Janis, Little Girl Blue, but it's a documentary about her. So it sort of takes you. It was a brief period in her life, really, from when she started, and she died 27. She was part of the 27 Club. So.
Oh, and that's your number three.
That's my number three. My number two is Walk the Line.
I was wondering when that was going to pop up.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm sorry for repeating.
No, Walk the Line is not on my list.
I went to Nashville in 2003.
Yeah.
I think he died in the June. I was there in the October, and I was really lucky to go to. A sort of memoriam concert, if you like.
Yeah.
I was invited to, and it was the most surreal thing because the family came on clearly mourning, like still majorly grieving, and we were part of this sort of huge family of people that were in this, you know, in the Ryman.
Okay.
And everyone was just sobbing, and you know, my parents and I sat there in the Ryman, in the Grand Ole Opry, just like. We shouldn't be here.
So for those who don't know Walk the Line, this is the biopic of Johnny Cash. Yeah,
sorry.
No, it's okay. That's Joaquin Phoenix and Reese Witherspoon.
Reese Witherspoon. But about Johnny Cash, and I think it was a great biopic.
Did that film have its final scene in Folsom Prison where he's just singing
at the beginning
of Folsom Prison Blues
I bought that album. I love that not because of that movie, but I got introduced to Johnny Cash blues in Folsom Prison. Mm. and then I watched the movie, and I liked the movie. Not bad choices. They're very good. Laura, what is your number three and what is your number two?
Folsom Prison, that's a real prison. It's a real maximum security prison.
It is, yes.
It was the reason I went to see one of the most powerful documentaries I've seen in the last year, a couple of weeks ago. But we don't have time to talk about that. What we're going to talk about is my number three and my number two. My number three is 20 Feet from Stardom, which is a documentary about backing singers. Brilliant backing singers.
Yes.
Who, many of whom are happy to be backing singers, but some of whom are maybe less happy being backing singers. And it's, it sort of follows four or five major label backing singers through sort of various recordings and various tours. And as a keen singer, I felt really inspired by it. And after I saw the movie, I really felt like it was okay to sing backing vocals.
I was going to say, did that movie inspire you to go and become a backup singer?
No, it inspired me to give the act of singing the respect it deserves rather than the act of performing as, you know, being the front person.
Sure.
It was really musically sensitive documentary, I thought.
Okay, and what's your number two?
My number two is Frank.
Frank. That is Michael Fassbender.
That is, yeah, the director is Lenny Abrahamson, who directed Room before last. And it has Michael Fassbender as sort of the big musical genius, the head of a band. Donald Gleason as...
Second week in a row we're talking about Donald Gleason.
Kind of the weakest link who makes everything fall apart.
Is he the weakest link?
Well, yes.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Maggie Gyllenhaal is a crazy theremin player. And it's just a really dark, almost unbearably dark comedy about songwriting and being in a band.
Okay. All right, that's one another one on my list. I wanted to watch it. The fact that you said Donald Gleason was the weak link makes me even want to see it even
not
more.
Not the weak link as a performer, but his character is has problems.
Okay, fair enough. My top three, number three and number two, I kind of cheated a little bit. I put 8 Mile and Straight Outta Compton as my number three. Of hip hop. Both the reason why I put two of them together is because they both represent hip hop excellently. Straight Outta Compton, however, I feel was a little light. You know, they pulled their punches on the executive producers, Ice Cube and the Dr. Dre character. While 8 Mile was visceral, it was amazing, and Eminem deserved the Oscar he got for that. My number two is What's Love Got to Do with It? Angela Bassett and Lawrence Fishburne, the biopic, or well, not the biopic, but the story of Tina Turner rising to fame. It's a visceral movie as well. Very good. I recommend anyone go and see it. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I am Marcus E. Acko.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
With our guest, Gemma Dorsett. We're talking about number one favorite movie about musicians. Gemma, what's your number one?
My number one is The Rose with Bette Midler, which is based loosely on the Janis Joplin story. I could talk about this all day, but I'm a huge, huge, huge Bette Midler fan. And yeah, I think she was amazing. She was just amazing in this film. So.
Okay. Laura, what's your number one?
Oh, now I want to choose Beaches, which is about a fictional musical
no,
singer.
No, that's the wrong movie discussion.
My number one is What's Love Got to Do with It?
Oh, there you go. So. Excellent. My number one is Ray. I mean, come
awesome.
On, Ray. As I can't think of anyone else that could play the character of Ray Charles better than Jamie Foxx. That movie is fantastic. Jamie Foxx, Kerry Washington, Regina King, Clifton Powell. Amazing movie about Ray Charles.
I just missed out on my top five. No,
you should put it back in your top five. All right, so now we have 1 minute to go. Let's wrap up with a Netflix and Amazon recommendations. Gemma, what would you like to recommend from Netflix or Amazon or something on TV?
Well, actually, okay, so I recently started watching You, Me, Her.
Oh, yes.
I loved it so much. I watched the whole thing in about a week. And I don't have time to do that kind of thing, so that tells you how much I loved it.
Yeah, you're talking to two people who basically binge watch shows in days, so in 2 days. Laura, what's your Netflix or Amazon recommendation?
I have two. Netflix is the documentary about Sharon Jones, a singer who recently died, and a brilliant singer who recently died. And on Amazon, Mr. Robot.
Mr. Robot.
I'm late to the party, but I've got there.
That's very good. Mine is an Amazon recommendation. It's Startup. It's got Martin Freeman, as he's amazing in it. Go and watch it. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze with Marcus E. Acko
and Laura Sampson.
Our guest today was Gemma Dorset. Gemma, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for having
me. And speak to you next week.
See you next week.